Blog Talk Radio. Hold on. Welcome, everyone, to the Deanne Burley Show, and this is Deanne. And, yeah, I was talking the background during the show, trying to get some information about some things that are going on. But anyway, welcome, everyone, and we're going to talk about life, Black Lives Matter. We're going to talk about what's going on in the city of Chicago. We are going to talk about this political agenda that they have, alleged agenda that's supposed to be for everyone, which it is not. And we're going to cover a lot of topics here today. One of the things I saw a couple of days ago, I had gone to a automatic meeting in one of the wards. I was trying to get a street named after my father. And basically, the interesting thing was I traveled a great distance to go to this meeting. I got there late because I wasn't directly knowing exactly how to get there. And then once I got to the meeting, I met with the alder person there, and I was pretty upset to the fact that, you know, I asked for a direct meeting, couldn't get that. And I know the previous aldermen that I've talked to, I met with them directly, talked to them, had no problem. But I was trying to get a street named, and I'm asking my listeners and people out there to pass the word on. My father, Dan Burley, terrific writer, a huge component to getting people elected, Black and white, huge component in politics and getting word out worldwide, and involved with not only media, but also the Black Power movement. He wrote Elijah Muhammad's Muhammad Speaks for the Nation of Islam. And, you know, the spiel, there's a lot of information on my websites about him and his entertainment. You know, he was a blues guy, a jazz guy, and wrote a lot of music for very famous, prominent people that came out of Chicago. He was part of Chicago Renaissance and New York Renaissance, and was known worldwide. And the thing is, really, just pulls on my string, is that he has not gotten any recognition, though people know him and his community, for his works and efforts. A lot of these politicians still living wouldn't have been politicians in this area if it wasn't for him pushing their name out through the media. And I'm going to say the same thing with myself. There was a couple occasions where a couple aldermen had come to me because of things that were going on with them, you know, where they were being discriminated against and threatened with jail time and stuff, and I covered them. At the time, I was on National World Radio and not only AM satellite and outside the country, and then also I connect my stuff into the internet. So most of the stuff I do here in Blog Talk goes on Facebook, Twitter. That's automatically now, but back in the day it wasn't. And then I also had broadcast on satellite radio and various other stations and things that I was hooked up with. And I would, you know, simultaneously do this and have a live broadcast, and did this on my own prior to all these networks doing it currently. And I had my own phone line, live phone line, that these calls would go through to. So the thing is that both my dad, myself, not at the same scale as he, but I'm well-known in my circles, and I guess I'm well-known a bit more because as I go out, more people come to me and tell me about conspiracies of what they're going through in Chicago, and I get calls from anywhere from California and abroad about, you know, people being accused of crimes or corruption or whatever, and I have them on my show or I investigate things that are not being done a lot of times in mainstream press because they're limited. They're limited because of the politics today. Who's paying who? Who gets their checks? Where do they get the checks from? So are they going to attack the food bearers for them, the people that take care of them and, you know, pay their paychecks? Or are they going to leave those stories out of the mainstream because it'll affect the amount of money that they, you know, reel in? I remember a long time ago when Walter Jacobson, he was one of the best news reporters out here, and one of the ones that everybody touted, you know, if you needed something to go, you go to Walter Jacobson, you go to Carol Marin, you go to, you know, someone on one of these, you know, broadcasts. And when you contacted them, they had a facility there that would not only investigate, listen to your case, but go out there and contact these private organizations to try to straighten out whatever matter you had. Today, it's not existing. I do that. If you contact me and there's stuff going on, I will investigate it. I will go after wherever I can. I will push the news into international circuits I'm tied into. Because, again, you know, I'm old school. I believe that what the press was doing back in the old days was more important than what we're seeing today, because now it's becoming so automated, it's not the same. Now, there's certain channels that are really, I think, great. I love 7. I look at ABC News, and I look at WGN News. They have a lot of good things. But then, again, my surface of looking at stuff is on the Internet. YouTube videos. It's more close to home. People out there, you know, with their podcasts, and they're out there with their cameras, cell phones, and filming things and loading it down so you'll have some knowledge of things. You can get knowledge of anything from, you know, how to fix something, how to purchase a home, scams, frauds, people that have frauded, defrauded people, on the spot coverage of police brutality, on-the-spot coverage of murders, on-the-spot coverage of things you would never even know existed. That's going into YouTube and searching through thousands and thousands of, I say close to millions of information out there. You know, how to fix your home, how to repair your computer step by step, how to build furniture, how to stop this infestation, how to manage things, law outlets, outside the law outlets, they let you know. All this stuff is right there on YouTube. And then if you can't find it, you Google it. Google it has the one biggest search engine, and then there's the other one, which is Bing, which a lot of people don't use. And then, like I said, if you go into Facebook, Facebook commands, you know, a lot of attention because there's a lot of people on there posting things. And now that has a live interface where you can do direct video on there. And then what I do is share it on the YouTube videos and Facebook and Twitter and every other social network media I have. And I send it abroad. I got 497,000 emails. I send it over there. So I have contacts. If it doesn't show up online, it shows up somewhere because I have that capability. Now, even though, you know, from back in the day, I always kept up with three things that to me is a very important essence to everything we do in this world. One is keeping up with technology. If you don't keep up with technology, folks, and you say, oh, I don't want to use this and this, that, and the other, you're going to be out of the loop as far as doing business, as far as being able to protect yourself, have knowledge of things. You need technology. The other thing is that you need to also know what it is that takes, you know, to basically get the word out. I'm very much into media stuff, you know, keep up with how to, you know, interface with media and IT. I'm really into IT. So I develop websites, I design them, put them online. I still do that, you know, and do them in minutes. Gotten so good at it and stuff. And it's not a hobby, it's what I am. And then the other thing I keep up with is law. I am very tickly on law. I watch what these people are doing. I watch the court system. I watch what happens, I guess, because of the lawsuits that my father had began because of people stealing his rights to his material. And he fought back and won a lot of times. And then the other one was the situation with I worked as a deputy. I worked in the one of the largest law firms out here that held property. It was involved with the U.S. Stock Exchange in New York. We're an international-based law firm, and I was head of conflict of interest. So the bottom line is that I keep up with stuff. I keep up and I keep current. Because you never know when you need it. Point on point. If you're working out here, I noticed when I was working in the 70s and 80s and 90s, people stayed in niches. You stay in this niche field. I just do this. I don't do anything else. I do accounts payable. I do accounts receivable. I do IT. I focus only in on that. Now, the problem is, when it comes to a situation where those markets get over laden, too many people are in them, guess what? You're out of job. You can't work anywhere. Then you look around trying to look for work, and you don't have the skills or background in those fields to get employed. So even as old as I am and ratchet as I am, I could turn around and get a job somewhere. And this is my field. I started out as a commercial artist, so I draw. I do layout and design. I do promotions and advertising, old school, new school. I also, let's see, what else? I have an accounting background. I was an accountant, LIFO, FIFO, a fixed asset, a bookkeeper. I can do that. I can do those things like accounts payable, receivable, whatever. I also did conversion, so I used to convert systems from one system to the other. Still know how to do that. Program, a computer analyst. Let's see, what else do I do? I can develop a business. So if you have a business idea or anything, I can look at it and put the scenario together to make it work for you, figure out, you know, what it could do to be cost-effective and put together, you know, a process so that, you know, instead of you running around talking to 90 million people, boom, one place, one stop. Also, I was in the mortgage industry. I decided I had this business called Royal Financial Group. And before that, I had Secured Homes of America. So what I did was I needed funding for my main group, which was Secured Homes of America. So what I did was I basically took over a mortgage company in the Gold Coast. And I was getting ready to purchase a mortgage company. I needed certain criteria to meet, so I worked that whole mortgage company out, cleaned it out. I had 19 loan officers and 38 telemarketers there. And it was really lucrative because at the time people were making big money in the mortgage industry. And we, you know, could have stayed there, but it was, you know, we saw corruption. So when we got in there, you know, I had a business, I had a corporation. So I went in there and started cleaning house. The corrupt people in there were looking at me, well, this is working out pretty good. Getting all cleaned up, you know, leave her alone and stuff. So I cleaned it up and I was, you know, moving towards my direction was to basically take that over so that I could do my project and move the money I needed to do the project into the business I had. And anyway, it's a long story that you will find out about once I finish doing this other process I'm working on. But the thing is that it was an act. Then I dabbled in every kind of thing, and I made sure that when I dabbled in, I had enough knowledge of it or completed knowledge that I could jump in. I used to go into companies, too, and basically take their software and analyze it and make it workable to the company. And then train employees. I worked at places, even IBM, I worked there in the training center at one point. So, you know, I got background. Only thing right now, I'm injured. You know, once I get uninjured, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. But the whole focus of what I'm saying to you right now is that we as a people need to go back to what we are and what we can do and, you know, tweak that. Because this society, the way it is now, is operating against us, especially African Americans. Now, now you're sitting back and say, oh, here she comes again. Well, I'm just telling you, in the society right now, we have young black men growing up. We have older black men on the street. They're unemployed. They have not had the same array of treatment as whites. I've seen this. Corporations told me at the levels where I was working that they were scared of black men coming in. You know, they were frightened of them coming in and maybe learning too much and maybe being able to take over and create their own companies. That was told by executives at levels and things of that. And this is the reason why, you know, look at us today, and we have these young people graduating college, and they seem to be totally undept, not knowledgeable of what it was back in the past. It's causing what's going on right here in the future. Now, what I'm going to talk about is black genocide. It's real. It's happening. They have, I would say, close to 60-70% of the population in U.S. jails happen to be African-American. It's a setup. And the thing that aggravates me the most is the Latinos that come in there, Mexicans come in. The Mexicans are allowed civil rights that we aren't even allowed here. They got traffic laws on the books that, you know, we black people get incarcerated for anything. Mexicans come in and they can either say something like, don't understand English, no, 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 and they can deport them back to wherever the heck they came from, and they don't have to stand trial. Or it's a situation that they have this illegal legal law going on that if you are of a Latino background, you go to court, you don't have a driver's license, guess what, folks? They give you extra time. They basically, you know, poo-poo whatever's going on, let you drive out there in the street, don't say anything, don't ticket them. I saw it in Will County. So the thing is, the black folks coming in there, they were getting ticketed, white folks were walking out, and the Latinos were. So what the heck was that? It was the equal justice, equal rights under law. And since I'm formerly a deputy of the court and also worked as a deputy, what the hell? Why is it that certain people have rights and other ones do? So this brings back Jim Crow laws. This brings back the situation that African Americans are not treated equally under the justice system. There are more and more people getting incarcerated. But and the thing is, I'm going to say here, and I'm going to go, I'm going on looking for this issue to be raised and taken care of as well. The Justice Department allegedly has rights on the books that it's supposed to be all people treated equally, right? It's not like that. I don't care, you know, I have Bob on the show, various other people, and they say, well, white people aren't treated the same way. In some rural areas, yeah, it might be different because there's more of a population than white and black, and you might see some of these dispersions. But in these big cities that I'm seeing, there's things going on out here. It's just totally hell ridiculous. And the thing is, it's been targeting African Americans, and black genocide is a real issue. I don't care what anybody says. This is how it works. Okay, way back, let's say 1900s or whatever, they did it in China first. Remember the opium rings? Well, in England, they started bringing opium in, and the Chinese started using opium. So they started opening opium dens, this, that, and the other. So the Chinese population got totally almost wiped out being on drugs. Now, this was done intentionally. They had this thing called, I think, British Tea Corporation or whatever, and they were popping into different places in, like, Saudi areas and various other areas in the Middle East, and they were pushing the tea in, and then they would come in with the tea and then use it as a way to get a foot in to do commerce. And then while they were doing commerce, they looked at the infrastructure to see how they could take it over. You know, back a long time ago, back in the medieval days, they would just bring their knights over, attack, they would fight, and then they would take over landmass. This was more devious because they come in with something that somebody might like and then use that as a means for them to come in and, you know, take over, you know, communities and areas. Okay, so as they got with that, it got more sophisticated. But then the Chinese population got addicted to drugs. Okay, so then they go back and say, that worked over there. Now, over here in the U.S., what did they do? Okay, you had the poppy plants in various other countries, not here in the United States, that were being grown. And then what happened? They ended up making, you know, all kinds of like heroin and, you know, all kinds of, you know, drugs that they, you know, use on the street. And then they started infiltrating the black community. This was like the 1900s, 1920s. A lot of people first got on alcohol, then the next thing they moved into the drug den. So then you had heroin addicts, you had all types of opium addicts, and that was due to the fact that it was brought in to black communities. Now, how did it get over here? Now, do you know black people didn't travel over into foreign countries and bring this over? We didn't have the capability to bring this over. We had no way of going on naval vessels and ships and bringing it over. Then they had customs. Now, we are going to go over there and bring massive amounts of drugs over, get through customs, and they're going to let us cross the border? I don't think so. So who brings this stuff in? You know, for real. Now, let's go back and check this out. Now, you have people that have diplomatic immunity. Okay, those diplomatic immunity folks, they have people and they have ships, they have all this stuff. And guess what? They bring the drugs in, and guess where they land them? Over in the black community. And Gary Webb, who I had talked to a couple of times with Mercury Press, he came out and was talking about how he found out that all these drugs are being thrown in the urban communities, hitting African-American communities, Latino communities, poor communities were coming in. And he did a whole broadcast with it in the newspaper, Mercury Press. And won a Pulitzer Prize for writing these articles. He also got three people, one guy out of Black University. He got the professor out of, Wisconsin, and a few other people together and proved that this was going on, and there was a big task force, a meeting in Washington, D.C. about, you know, these drugs coming in and how they came across the border. And Gary Webb was right on it with all these people, brought these black individuals in. And then a few black people got up there and said, oh, there's no problems, there's problems with blacks. When they did that, it was enough for the Congress to send and say, oh, there ain't no problem, walk away. Because they want to deal with it. Because it's okay to bring drugs in the black community, dump it in the black community, and accuse blacks of selling and doing what they claimed they were doing with drugs. Now, it even gets deeper and more devious. At the time, from the 1920s, before 1920s on, African Americans owned their own businesses. There were black bankers. There were individuals out there that owned actual marketplaces, stores in the community, and they were flourishing, and they were servicing their own people. People were making money to the level where we had several banks that opened up that were owned by black individuals. We had multimillionaires, you know, within the black community. We had people like, S.B. Fuller was one. S.B. Fuller made his money and he gave a lot of money back in the community trying to make other millionaires. He was a very decent man because he owned a lot of publications and co-owned a lot of publications with my father, Dan Burley. The Negro Digest. My dad co-owned with him. There was another publication, Pittsburgh Courier. Everything that he put in the Pittsburgh Courier, my dad wrote for the Pittsburgh Courier. My dad wrote for every publication out there. Plus, he managed and edited Amsterdam News in New York. He co-owned the New York Age with S.B. Fuller. And there was huge amounts of material writing that he would do for all these publications here and across not only the United States but abroad. Now, because of that media, because it had black millionaires that were in the communities, that had banks, we were flourishing at the time all the way up until the 1950s. Then the government got, the thing was, from the get-go, from the infrastructure, African Americans were slaves, and they were not supposed to move from being indentured serfs. Now, today, we all are indentured serfs, but it's a different quality because, again, we were brought over here for a reason. And the reason, again, we, you know, we as blacks don't know and we don't want to know because we've been taught not to know anything. You know, the mindset is don't know anything about the past, and then you got individuals circulating information that's not really factual. And the reason they're doing that, again, is if you deceive the people, what is it, Satan, the devil's supposed to be the great deceiver? If you deceive the people, you control them, deceive them, think, believe this is that, and it's not. So you have deception going on. So the deception was that blacks were out here selling drugs. So the deception was that the blacks had the drugs. Now, how did we get the drugs? Now, why would we sell drugs if we had the infrastructure already in place? Well, then in the 60s, what the plot was, they took young white youth during this Vietnam War, and they had these guys like, you know, go down in the Vietnam area. And that was a drug issue, too, because they were bringing drugs out of Vietnam. And these people were basically cultivating new levels of drug life. They had LSD coming out of places like Vietnam. They had other drugs that they were manufacturing, creating over in the jungles. And they were moving these drugs back to the United States. Now, guess how, what, folks? Now, you think that black folks was moving over here? No. Government was moving in there. And the places they put it, right in the black community. So, you know, if you look at The Godfather, it was kind of interesting if you look at it, and they were talking about the drug trade, and, you know, Marlon Brando's character did not want his people involved with drugs because he knew it was addictive and it would cause a situation, which the Italians also had their problem with because some of their people got addicted to drugs. But this drug trade was already in the mix, set up, okay, to basically genocide certain individuals. So during the war, now, they send a whole black military over. At first, they were saying, you know, blacks were not qualified, and they were scared blacks would get in the military because blacks would have guns. So the first wave of blacks going in the military were not armed. They were not part of our military. Later on, Robux, a series of Robux, convinced the military, you know, to put the black military in just like the white military. And so anyway, they were trained and they went over there. They even allowed some of these blacks into West Point and different places. And friends of mine that, you know, now deceased, they were friends of my dad. Alonzo Parham was one. He was second man to go to West Point, and he was a commercial artist, and he had this tremendous story of racism and the way he was treated. He went to West Point, and the first man to graduate, he went through it too, but Alonzo Parham couldn't take it anymore. They put him in a little room like a closet. He could not have interaction with other people in the West Point. He stayed in there to do his classwork, and he was not allowed to talk to anyone other than his instructor. And he said he was so badly isolated that it affected him so badly. He hated West Point. And at the point that he almost was to graduate, he couldn't take it anymore, he left West Point. Now, that was a huge, you know, story because, you know, this was supposed to be a fraction of time that we were supposed to see the merger of blacks into the military and these different areas, but racism was there and present. So then the blacks that went into the military, they were segregated too. So you had black military and white military. Whites did not like the blacks, so there was a, you know, situation going on there. And the thing was that, you know, this disparity has traveled up until recently in the military culprits, because there are still people that are not happy with blacks being in the military, and they're not happy with black people having guns. So that's why the Rifle Association and Gun Associations formed up, because blacks had guns, and again, they didn't want blacks to have rights to having weapons because they are still considered in people's minds as slaves. And you can say, well, oh, no, that's not true. I had gun club people on my show when I was on RBN, and they spoke of this. You know how the black people were the reason why they started, you know, the NRA and various other stuff was because of blacks owning guns. And I had that on RBN. And right after that, you know what, it was my show went off the RBN network. Could have been because of that. Because the thing is, they don't want people to know what is going on. They're covering up all this hate and nonsense they have in this country. Now, I'm going to say again here, too, no other country in the world at any time, and you know, until this country came up with this name, used the word blacks for us. black African Americans or whatever. They never used that word because there was no black or white people existing on the planet. Tribal, and people didn't look at color like that. But this country did that so they could divide and conquer. If you divide people up and have them hate one group of people, not having knowledge of the reason why you hate, that's the reason why you have a situation of division in the United States of America. You have division based on culture and race. And because of that, all these segments are not together, so therefore they have control and power. So they can rob and steal, rape, and do whatever they want to, because we're fighting internally against each other over nothing, over absolutely nothing. All of us are in the same boat. All of us are now considered indentured serfs. And somebody else's mind, they might think they're not, but the truth is you're indentured serf. Because my question on this level is that if you have to continuously work past retirement, past everything, in order to get enough pennies together, to move together, to make your life livable, you're indentured serf. And then you take the money that you get and you go out and spend it on products and services they offer up and give it right back to the same people, you're indentured serf. It's the same way it's slaves dropped slavery and went into indentured servitude. It's the same thing we all are right now, indentured serfs, blacks and whites. You just think that you're at another level. You're not. It's the matrix of your mind that makes you believe that you are, you know, dealing in real time, real money and stuff. No, and there's a cap to how much money you can make, black and white. If you get to a certain level, they will come after you and make sure that you don't have money at a certain level. And then if you go beyond that level and they allow it, then, you know, you got to watch out, because there's going to be another wave. You know, you don't know what they might do the next level to attack you to make sure that you don't have any additional money. That means that they'll send somebody in, they'll wipe out your business, they'll threaten you, you know, mess up, you know, things with your family so you can't focus. Make sure that you are in the realm of not being able to succeed past a different certain point. Because the closer you get to them, the closer you might be able to manifest a way out and see things as, you know, I'm telling you, as reality. We're not working in reality. Every day we just go to work. We don't see the reality. But we have hatred in this country greater than any kind of catastrophe you think of. And because we hate so much, we are so diffused with hate, we cannot see right in front of us. Now, I'm not saying all of us are, but the large majority hate people, hate this, hate that. And that's the reason why I see people like Donald Trump moving rapidly into office. You got people out there that hate different things. They hate, you know, all these Mexicans that come across the border. All this is going on. Oh, I hate this. I hate that. So then what did he do? He built a whole campaign on hate. So all these haters are all behind him and they're backing him. Now, Hillary's got these other people, staunch Democrats and women's rights organizations that want women. But the bottom line is neither one of these candidates are for any of them, because they're at another food chain level and they don't see reality. And if you see the history of both of them and see how they have treated or been involved with African Americans or any other resolved culture on this planet, you'll see that there's, you know, an issue. And to jump up and say this one's better than the other, you know, you're fooling yourself. Now, going back to the issue of blacks. Now, because of the drug trade, you know, they had Lady Sings the Blues. You saw her. She was all addicted to drugs. People in the entertainment industry got addicted to drugs. Sports players got addicted to drugs. You got young people getting addicted to drugs. And that was because the next wave was to move business and industry out of the black community. So in the 60s, you had the riots. The riots when Dr. King got killed. Now, blacks knew better than go into the white community and start, you know, shooting it up and acting, you know, up and stuff in rage, because if they went over there immediately, especially in the Chicago area, they would send the military in. Now, why did I say that? Well, when they put the projects up, they put the projects right by the expressway system. They put them by the expressway system specifically because if there was a lot of, you know, situations with blacks, they were in the projects that were in a situation where they might act up, they could easily bring the military in and wipe them out. In fact, there was a scene a long time ago when they put the projects up where they had the military coming down the Dan Ryan. There was, you know, tanks and armored cars and stuff coming down the Dan Ryan, letting people know in military presence. So this is the reason why you saw a situation with African-Americans not going into white communities, destroying anything in the 60s because they knew that they would be destroyed. So what did they do? They destroyed their own community, tore it up. But they thought that the people that, you know, put the infrastructure up would come back and straighten out. So from the time Dr. Martin Luther King died all the way up to just recently, I would say the last 10 years, 20 years or whatever, the infrastructures in many of these areas were destroyed because and left it that way because they were not going to fix it. They made sure we didn't have the money to fix it on our own. They redlined us in regards to getting financial help through the mortgage industry, banking industry, and stuff. And I could talk directly of that because I was in the mortgage industry. I saw what they were doing. I was told if a house was under $100,000, you ain't going to get a loan on it, period. So that's redlining. So folks that had houses and stuff, they had to go to contractors to get a loan. And when they did a contract loan, you know what? They were eased out of the property somewhere or other. So ownership rights of these properties that black did own at one point started dwindling away, didn't exist anymore. They were gone. Did not have property rights at all. So a lot of these homeowners, thinking that they were homeowners under contract clauses, they couldn't even get a loan or anything because their houses were under $100,000. This is truth. I'm telling you what I know because I was the director of a mortgage company. I was in the mortgage industry in levels you wouldn't even believe. I was doing international deals involved with, you know, people. I'll go to other levels on that later, but not for this show. But I'm just telling you that blacks have been redlined and denied rights financially all across the board. I recall some people trying to get, you know, even business loans, you know, starter business loans and things. That African Americans, they were blocked, could not get a loan whatsoever. While other people would go in and they get government guaranteed loans. Black individuals wanted to open grocery stores. They could not open grocery stores. Again, redlined. They would go to SBA. SBA would give them a whole lot of documents, paperwork, and discourage them. But yet, Middle Easterners would go in there, hop in, get loans or have money that they brought in from the Middle East and go to the storefront and just bring whatever they had in there, groceries, wherever they got them. Could have been from whatever. I saw some government cheese boxes they were slicing up and selling. But the thing was, they could open in the black community where a black person couldn't even do that. They couldn't open it. If they went in there, they had to have legitimate license. They had to have this. They had to have that. These other individuals would come in. They had nothing. Or they go to, you know, one of these places, government-affiliated places, get a loan with half the problem that a person here from the United States would have. So blacks were cut out of the loop. They could not get the same thing as whites or foreigners coming in the country. I know people that back in the 50s had gas stations. Loudermilk Brothers had a gas station over in Lake Meadows on King Drive. It was 34th and King Drive. Anyway, they owned the whole parking lot and stuff, and they were millionaires. One shot himself and killed himself, and the other one jumped off the building and killed himself. I don't know why or what happened, but they actually owned the gas station and the land the property was on. There were other individuals that back then were able to do that, but then when this civil rights movement came about and they got everybody all doped up and got the kids of these families that worked very hard to develop things in the community, well, those kids came in and they basically poo-pooed what their families were about. They got a college education. They looked around and they basically, you know, okay, they were offered professorships, they were offered this and that and the other. And the property their families had, it was like in Chicago on the South Side. And in their mind, they wanted to live over there. And then the community started changing because more and more drugs came in. So with more and more drugs, more impoverishment came about. And so these kids left their family, you know, wealth and went somewhere else and let the property all run down, or just left it alone and let it go, you know, to the level where somebody just came in and became an abandoned property. So that's how a lot of the communities started going down and down and down. Now, some of the bigger families in the community owned newspapers. And I'm really in despair about this because I was like, you know, I grew up, saw these newspapers, and one of them, I had a column in the Defender, and I had a column in the American newspaper at 10 years old. That's how much, you know, power my family had, and I was, you know, it was called That's a Fact. And anyway, the newspaper, like the Defender, Crusader, and the Johnson Publishing Company, they all worked out of funeral homes. Why? Because they weren't even allowed to get property to have a regular business. So funeral homes were the only ones that had money. So what they would do is they would go in the funeral homes, and funeral home owners would, you know, say, okay, yeah, you can, you know, do this with the building. So they would convert the funeral parlor into a printing press. They get printing press in there. It was four-color press or whatever, which I knew how to operate. I was taught that. And they would run the newspaper out of there and then put paper boys on the street and distribute the newspaper locally in the community. Okay, so, the Defender was doing it. Crusader, which was co-owned with my dad, with Don Bomb Laval. And they worked their, you know, went off putting these publications out, spreading out news and having actual reporters on the street, digging into news stories, investigating. It was a real live newspaper. My dad was also friends with Walter Winchell. And Walter Winchell, would co-write columns, you know, and have my dad's columns pop in his publication because Walter Winchell was not racist at all. He was amazed at the talent my dad had, and he was, pretty much a good friend of my father, as Dorothy Kilgallen and other people in the white media press. So my dad was able to merge out not only of the black community, but merge into the white community and get, you know, stories published. So that, you know, it was multicultural before we even had the word or knowledge of multicultural. So the reason I'm telling you this is because this is important facts to understand why blacks are where they are now. So we were achieving up until the 50s, and in the 60s they put the drugs in the community intentionally. Gary Webb brought that out. He had paperwork and documentation for the government operation doing it. We have so-called intelligent black people get up in Congress and say, oh, there's no problem at all, this is their problem, and canceled out the Congress investigating this. And then that person, by the way, got a huge amount of stock in this one particular company for doing his efforts of basically messing up Gary Webb and the people that came about and bringing this about. And one of the individuals, I think he died, that was bringing this about in Congress. And then later on, allegedly, Gary Webb killed himself because they impoverished him. He couldn't get work in the newspaper industry anywhere. And he was traveling around the country speaking. And they claimed he was in the hotel and lost his motorcycle, so he killed himself, allegedly. I don't believe it, but, you know, because they hunt you down. They don't want any information out, so they hunt you down and destroy your reputation, destroy your family. That's what they do at another level. They do not want this information I'm giving you out, but you need to know what is going on, the facts. So when they did all this infrastructure changing of putting the drugs in the community, before they put the drugs in the community, they started moving business out. So black companies started folding up. They started taxing the black business owner. They started going after individuals. They started when they put the drug trade in, they started having individuals come in and destroy black businesses to a level that they just shut down completely. So, and then the white businesses that started moving into these urban areas, they started shutting down and moving out. So then these areas had nowhere that young people could go to work. When the infrastructure was in place, people could work in the movie theater, they could work somewhere and gather a few pennies for them to survive off of. But today, it's not like that. It's not. So now you had, you know, these people now without jobs in the community. And then I saw when I went out trying to get a job when I was very young, how this thing was structured. If you went out there and looked for work, and I had, you know, background to do what, you know, accounting, whatever, I was being blackballed. I went into companies and, you know, I went to household finance. They said, oh, yeah, hire, because they heard my voice on the phone. They thought I was white. Got down there, and they saw me. They pulled out this old dusty test that they had from 1910 or something. I took it. I got 100% on it. They were shocked. They were confused. So then they came back and basically let me know they weren't going to hire me because I was African-American. Then I went to another company. I talked to this guy on the phone, and he told me, oh, you're hired right on the spot. Got over there, so I was black. And he said, oh, well, the woman used to work for me. She's coming back. That's the type of racism I'm talking about. That was going on heavily in the 70s. Through the 80s, through the 90s, I saw it. They would make sure that African-Americans could not get work, even if you were intelligent enough, capable enough to hold a job, you were not going to get work. Then the Congress and Senate came in with these bills, you know, Equal Rights Amendment, all this types of stuff. So they had to cover their, you know, what. So what they would do then is they would let people infiltrate in on lower range jobs. You know, you work as a clerk, you work in the file room, da da da, and they gave management jobs to people working in the file room or whatever. And that was big for a black person because that was about all you could get for them. You know, was to work in the file room as a manager. So, you know, then the jobs in the community, they started dwindling down too. You know, was no work. So more and more drugs popped in, and they made it affordable for people to get it. In fact, the drugs, some of the drugs I gathered, they were giving out for free, yet people hooked on drugs. And then these young men were taking the drugs, we'd get the women hooked on drugs. So now it's like a demon, something like Dracula or something, one person to the next. Everybody's on drugs, and then they found out that they could make money selling drugs. So that was the only income that they had because there was no infrastructure, no business, or nothing. There was nothing that they manufactured, had in the community to sell. So when the man brought the drugs in, hey, the drugs were being sold by us. And then the thing was that they put it in these target areas. So then whites started coming in and getting the drugs, and it came in the area. But again, they set that whole thing up intentionally. It was black genocide. And I don't care what anybody out there says, because I know a lot of, you know, I have a lot of white listeners, I have a lot of black listeners, but listen, bottom line is this is, I was down here in the ground, saw what happened, a lot of people knew, and Gary Webb knew, he's from your community, he knew, and he lost his job, and a lot of people that were in the universities came in, they were targeted. Couple people were, you know, I don't know if they were murdered or what, but they disappeared because they went to Congress and Senate about this situation. And all of them poo-pooed it because the government's been involved with bringing drugs in the first place. Because I'm going to ask you, how the hell is all these drugs getting past the border? How they get past customs? How they get past all this stuff? We have no ability to do that. You see black people with naval vessels bringing drugs in? You see them coming through Mexico or going into these different communities bringing kilos of drugs in? No. Coming from a different source. In fact, one of the Saudi princes came over there, had a whole thing, kilos of drugs on his plane. They arrested him for a second, let him loose because he has diplomatic immunity. He wasn't arrested. But if a black kid is on the street selling a little tiny nickel bag of, weed or something, they get to throw the whole book at him. But the other person selling it, they let him go. Now, the other thing they're doing now moving forward today with how this situation is, now, you know, they legalized marijuana. Oh, yeah, all people running around legalized, you know, marijuana, da-da-da, this, that, and the other. That's another hoax and game, too. Because, see, the government got into making marijuana. Now, the marijuana that people got on the street is a whole other quality because it's got other stuff in it that's toxic and very dangerous, and it is now a lethal weapon. They put it out there intentionally because, again, they're targeting the black community. Black people don't all know what's going on with that. They're selling, think they're selling regular marijuana, but it's not. It's being grown in forest reserves, government installations and stuff. It has other forms of chemicals in it. This is the reason why you see people more with violent attitude issues with, you know, addictions that you can't get rid of. And it's because of the amount of stuff, the chemicals they got in this marijuana that people are, you know, pushing. Now, again, it's not legal. You say it's legal, but they let you think it's legal, but it's not really legal because, you know what, it's still a fine. If you're found with it, you're going to get, you know, charged with it. So the thing is that even though they claim it's legal, it's not legal. You think it's legal, it's not. You're still going to get charged. It's a game they're playing, folks, against African-Americans, against people, because it's part of black genocide. Now, the thing with the shootings and murders in the community. Now, the shootings and the murders in the community have escalated over the years, but it's always been the same shootings and murders, and the same ratio applies to all over the various towns of Chicago. It's not just South Side, West Side, Black Side of town. These murders are happening all over the place. And the numbers that they have are for all over the place. But then when you read this article and look at it, it's about those people acting up again, and those people are African Americans. We're not doing anything. This whole thing is a set up from the start. The murders, the things that they're talking about, the same range of murders is the same that occurred before. I mentioned the other day when I was on the air of this book I'm reading about this professor was murdered over in University of Chicago. He was shot. Somebody went in the bathroom stall, stood up on the toilet, and took a low-caliber pistol and shot him in the head and killed him. Now, he was Romanian, but during the time that article was written in 1998, it was 976 murders in Chicago, one of the highest levels of murders stated. But then they have 976 murders today, and they'll use that same number stating that the murder ratio is higher than ever when the murder ratio was the same going back to 1998. The reason being is the media never covered any black murders. People were getting murdered in black community all the time. They get murdered in white community all over the place in Chicago. So what they do is they concentrate their efforts on one segment population because they have a reason to it. Now, what's the reason they're doing? Trying to get the guns out of the black community. Because the last segment that they're going to do is when they get the military to come in under when they declare martial law, which I think is coming real soon, they're going to make sure that nobody has any way to have a right to defend themselves, which is a constitutional issue. But see, the whole thing is they play on you. You don't know your rights, don't know civil rights, don't know the law, don't have no clue of anything, and you just march out to doom. And another thing, too, these courts are operating illegally. Why am I saying that? Because how the hell are you going to have a prosecutor and a public defender use the same material as evidence against and for a plaintiff or a defendant? Now, the reason I'm saying point on point is that a public defender doesn't have that many people, doesn't have that much budget to go in and investigate any of these cases. So when he gets a case of a poor African-American kid that doesn't have the money to pay or provide legal fees for himself on being accused of something, the first documents that the defender will get is from the state's attorney. Okay, now it could be as biased as they want it to be, but the bottom line is that the information is only going to be provided, you know, to the public defender's office through the state's attorney. They're not going to go out and investigate claims. They're not going to investigate cases. Never do, never will. I work there. I know. I'm a former deputy. So the issue is that when they do this stuff, you know, people of color are locked up in prison and they can't get out. They don't have the money. They don't have the means to pay $5,000 for an attorney to do a full investigation. They don't have money for an investigator to go in and get evidence, of, you know, relating to whatever crime they're allegedly committed. So then they serve a huge amount of jail time. Now, Cook County Jail is supposed to be a temporary holding facility, but now it's becoming a holding facility for blacks and the mentally ill. They have mentally ill people there that have been locked up in there for years because they don't have any mental facilities anymore. They shut them all down because they claim they don't have any money. But then they have huge amounts of money, pockets of money here, that they are misusing. Where the hell is all this money gone? You don't ask them. You just pay it out of your taxes. They grab it, and where the hell does the money go? So then now you got all these people locked up in jail sitting there. And these holding beds. And Cook County Jail is one of the nastiest prisons that I have ever seen in my life. I talked to current sheriffs down there, and they're in danger of having diseases, too. It's just as bad as going in a Legionnaires' disease facility. I mean, it is nasty, and it is vile. And the thing is that Cook County should be ashamed of themselves because they have enough money to go in there and clean that place up and make it a prison that, you know, if people are in there, these people get, you know, removed out of jail and put it back on the street. So you wonder why there's an infestation of bugs and bed bugs and all types of diseases and stuff that's coming out of these prison systems because they don't clean them up. That's filthy. I mean, you can smell the urine if you stand out on 26th in California before you hit the building. And then, again, the money that was coming in for Cook County Jail was going into the privatized prison system. Privatized prison system was going to make a lot of money for Cook County. So they took the money and launched it over into these privatized systems instead of taking care of the systems that are here in this area. Now, the reason why I'm telling you this is because, again, you know, government is supposed to work for the people within their area, not outside, not private interest groups, not people that are going to provide you campaign funds, not all these different things that are going on. This money is supposed to be earmarked to the community. It's not. It's just like they closed down Michael Reese Hospital, whole medical facility that is totally needed. Because they shut it down, these hospitals are so overburdened with huge amounts of patients in the ER, they don't have enough room to even take care of them. I mean, it's 6-hour waits in these hospitals in the ER. So if you have a very bad situation, you know what? Get in there. You might die before you're seen. That's how bad it is. But they took out a whole hospital saying they didn't need it. So now they have the land over there, so they're trying to figure out what to put on it. Well, they could have left the hospital there. This is the stuff that they do. And again, that hospital sat in the black community. There was no reason for them to remove that hospital. It was viable and needed, and now there's more people going to these hospitals, lesser hospitals around, and now you have more people sicker than ever because they're not getting medically treated. This is the cycle. This is the system. This is how it's set up. And it's not right, but it becomes right because nobody says anything about these things. And furthermore, it just irritates me to understand and see these disparities going on because it looks like we are totally not with it, not understanding. Because I talk to younger generations, you know, people that are in their 20s and 30s. Some of the 20-year-olds know what's going on. 30-year-olds are, you know, abyss. You know, oh, I got my law degree. Oh, I got, you know, I'm educated and stuff. They don't understand the makeup of what's going on. Even the blacks are in the community, the blacks that have gone to college and come out and stuff, they're looking at their own people and say, ooh. And not understanding how they got rooted into all this nightmare and how the community started disintegrating, falling apart because the younger community left and the older community that was committed to bringing things in the community to make the things work were designated to make sure that black people had stuff. I mean, we had buildings, we had offices, we had there's offices, we had banks and things in the community. All that stuff is gone. And the thing that bothers me most is the black don't own newspapers. My dad was in the publishing newspaper business before he died. We had the Owl Publishing Company, co-owned the Crusader. Was in every publication around. I'm looking around, and all these publications that John Johnson put out, he was the first black man to have a office on North Michigan Michigan Avenue. They didn't allow blacks to have property over there on Michigan Avenue. His address was 900 North Michigan. That building sat there for years, even after he died. Somehow, those people that were his relatives did something that totally took out Johnson Publishing Company. The building is now Columbia College's property. And Johnson Publishing Company allegedly is in a funeral home back on the south side like it used to be. This is 2016, and you're telling me people didn't have any sense to make sure they maintained that building so that it was still operable, so that the magazine would still go on, so that, you know, the heirs of the people that had this very incredible landmark, and that should have been landmark property, by the way. I don't know how the hell this stuff happened. It didn't make any sense to me. Anyway, it's Columbia College. The Defender, that building was so old, it was a funeral home. I remember going there as a little girl when my dad was with the Defender. And that's now moved somewhere else in another funeral home further back down south, and that building was taken over by someone else and controlled by a white-owned bank, both of them, by the way, controlling interests of two major things. I remember when George Johnson had Afro-Sheen products, and, Afro-Sheen cosmetics. You heard it on shows like Soul Train and everything. The only one that was traded on the U.S. Stock Exchange, that is now Revlon products. How the hell did they get a black product, get over to Revlon because there was a divorce and they were fighting, so the wife decided to sell it over to Revlon? This is the reason why the black community disintegrated. We don't have our own jobs. We don't have anything to offer up. The country itself has nothing to offer up because everything that we have here, we don't manufacture and produce anything. Everything's being brought in from abroad. So nobody's got any real jobs, and the black community doesn't have any jobs because nobody's creating anything. I tried to go into Robbins, Illinois. I was trying to take over a land base over there because that was the only place we had a black airport. I go over there and talk to the mayor over in Robbins, Illinois, and she's looking at me like, oh, it's crazy, talking about I wanted just some land to clear it off so I could put an airport in. Where's the symptom? And that would, you know, no, you can't do it. But somebody else will come in there, you know, that is not African American, she'll just open the door, jump up, and do whatever. And that's why if I go to alderman's meeting, I go to the city council meeting, I go to anything, and I see black people ain't doing the right thing, I will talk up, I will talk about them on the air and spread it internationally because I am sick and tired of these legislators that people allegedly are talking in, they're Republican, Democrat, whatever the hell that they want to call themselves, because I'm not one of these parties. I refuse because I know what goes on. I was with News Election. I saw a fixed election going all the way back to Jimmy Carter. I was over at the Medina Temple. I was in there, and that whole computer system was down. But they said, Ronald Reagan won. Ronald Reagan didn't win nothing. Jimmy Carter conceded because it said the news media said that he lost. But he didn't lose because all the shooting networks and machines were down all over the country. I know that because I was working it. So the bottom line is that we need to look at what's happening. I'm looking at another thing, too, that's really devastating, too. It's almost like we're in Auschwitz. I'm in a wheelchair now. There's so many people out here in wheelchairs and have diabetes and different things and, you know, kidney failure and stuff. And it's only, it looks like it's targeting mainly the black community. Now, reason being, now I had some scientists on my show, Ernest Dineglass, to work with, what's his name? Over there, Einstein, various other people have been on my broadcast over years. He claims that there was radiation put in milk Asian milk has been causing people to have diabetes. He did a whole segment report on that. I had Dr. Peter Duesenberg on my show about AIDS. Now, I worked at Argonne National Lab, and all we did was AIDS and cancer research. Now, I'll tell you, folks, during that time when AIDS was going on, there was no radical information on what AIDS was. It was kind of like, you know, it's this, it's that, and then mononucleosis was added in, and da, da, da. But Peter Duesenberg said that it was caused by the actual cure. These things that you take, medication you take, gives you the disease. A lot of these things have side effects. We're not told about the side effects. They got me because I got sick and went in the hospital, and they started giving me. I had a brain bleed injury. I'm going to bring this up because this guy that was at Martin just died, and I haven't had a chance to investigate it. But I bet you anywhere, anyhow, he probably was taking Xarelto. I had a brain bleed injury from the second car crash I was in. And by the way, all three car accidents I was in, I did not cause. Somebody ran into me, Mack trucks. Somebody tried to block me in the intersection, cause this other car hit me and stuff like that. And then the last one was when I ended up, you know, hitting that ice and ended up in that frozen retention pot. But the thing is interesting enough. Why are they giving Xarelto to people that had surgery? Xarelto causes you to bleed. So then when I was in the hospital for this surgery for a brain bleed injury to my head, they rushed me into the surgery room. And then when I came out of consciousness, I'm looking at this drip and seeing them injecting something. And one eye open, I said, what's that? And I got one eye open and my cell phone in my other hand. Because in my cell phone, I Google and look up stuff. Oh, we're giving Xarelto. I said, what's Xarelto? Oh, well, this is a medication that the doctor prescribed. So I looked it up. I already had a bleed injury in my head, so why would you give somebody with a bleed injury in their head something that makes you bleed? I said, no, 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 take that out. Take that out. I don't want that. And like I said, this is just 1 minute or two out of surgery. They're giving me medicine for brain bleed. So Tommy, that used to be on Martin, he had an operation on his knee. Now, how the hell is it if you got the operation in your knee, you're going to bleed internally from your intestine? Now, was he given Xarelto too? Because when I looked at Robin Williams' death, I found out that they gave him some medication that caused him to go crazy. It was in the list of medications. That's what I do. I investigate things. I look into things. So these medications are dangerous as hell, and people don't know them, and they're prescribing them, and they take them. It's like blood pressure medicine can cause you to have higher blood pressure. Some medicine can give you strokes. You have to look at the pamphlet, and then you got to read it and cross-exam, because these people won't tell you, especially if you're black. They ain't going to tell you nothing. You go in there and take that medicine, and you got all kinds of stuff, and you don't know why, and it's because the medical field is told not to tell you. I had somebody tell me the other day, you know, I went in, my blood pressure's been 247, 250, over 150. I go in the emergency room, and then the doctor sent me emergency room, and then I go to the emergency room, and they tell me, oh, no, 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 you're okay, go home. And then they keep doing this, sending me back and forth, and then I talked to another physician. They told me, oh, this is what they do. If your blood pressure is continuously high, they won't treat you. So if you go in the emergency room and you have a high blood pressure, they say that's, you know, what your norm is, so they won't treat you. But he said that if my blood pressure continues this high, I could die, have a stroke, and have a heart attack. So I asked him what to do. He told me what to do. But the bottom line is, why didn't they tell me what to do? They're supposed to be touted as doctors in the ER. They're supposed to be crisis doctors. So I got to be my own doctor. I got to do my own research and do all this stuff with my medicine. So why do I have to pay billions of dollars to doctors that are not doing what they're supposed to do? And like I said, there's a huge ratio in the black community of diabetes. It makes absolutely no sense. It has to be from some source. And doctor that I had on my show, Ernest Steinglass, you can look up his report. He claims that it's coming from radiation. Now, speaking of radiation, within the last 2-3 months, there's a huge amount of radiation that just came over the Chicagoland area, Illinois, from a nuclear power plant that the media is not covering. I gave this information to the media, and they said that it was like a DEFCON 4 level, and not to be out in any rain or anything like that because of the amount of radiation that's in, you know, the atmosphere and how dangerous it is. So if that's the case, if you're inhaling around radiation, that means that you need more iodine in your system. And if you don't get the iodine in your system, then that causes you to have other things happen to you. You can rupture, bleed, and it can cause all kinds of other ailments and stuff if you don't understand or know what, you know, what radiation is and how it can damage and cause cancer and stuff. But this is what the black community is going through. Not having knowledge of these things, not having infrastructure, be able to work and get enough money to support itself. Jobs, there's no such thing as jobs in the community anymore, no jobs, period, because there's no industry, nothing that we produce here in the United States that anybody wants. So the bottom line is, who's at fault here? It's not the black community. It's your own community that's doing this. You all control the politics. You all control the money. We don't have any safe soul in school. The schools right now are so badly deteriorated, it's scary. They're making sure that people aren't educated. They're taking away educational rights. And the worst thing, and another person told me recently, this thing that's going on with this Israel company, I'm just finding out about it. I got to look this up more, but there's an Israeli company that if anybody in the United States is caught doing business with this Israeli company, they're going to be jailed and fined, and they're going to be considered a terrorist. Now, that should be all over the media, too, so people know not to do business with this so-called Israeli company, but it's not being covered. Again, we are the people that are being targeted. We're being targeted by deaf people, somebody coming out and shooting us, and a lot of them are not police. Some of them are. Some of them are people that I think they plant in the community that are doing these kills. Some of them are police, and if they are police because of the fact that they have gone through so many different things in their lives. I told you about the incident where this one man had told me that he was standing there in a street corner and a police officer came and picked him up. He wasn't even doing anything. Drove him out in a rural area and told him to get out of the car and run because he was mad at his wife. So he just was going to shoot some random person, a black person. You know, who cares? That kind of stuff. I got power. I got a gun and I got a police wagon. So let me go terrorize some people. And then why are they expunging these people's records? Some of these people go in the police force. They shouldn't be in there. And they're connected with somebody. They get in there and they expunge their previous record and they're working the police force. So the thing is, unless we clean up the system and make it right for all of us, it's not, this whole system's not going to work. I have people tell me, oh, it's nothing, no bother, just keep going, you know, and it'll dissipate. It never dissipates. It's just the same thing the Jews did during World War II. They sat there in that ghetto they had over there in Poland, and they were sitting there, oh, it's going to dissipate, and we'll be okay, don't worry about it. Next thing you know, tanks came in, and those people were brought out of the ghetto, and they were gunned down and shot dead for not saying or doing anything. And that's why the Jews right now, today, they got the Jewish Defense Fund, they got the Jewish disorganized, they got 16 different organizations. Everybody act up, boom, they're on it. We blacks don't have nobody. The organizations that we did have are not funded or functional enough to do anything in our community to protect us. They aren't. I used to be at Operation Push. I used to be in Operation Push headquarters. I was in part of the media coalition. I set up Walter Jacobson and Carol Marin to come out there, talk about why the media was doing what it was doing. And now, what do they do? What's going on? Nothing. It's a nightmare, and unless we wake up and try to do something to change this, we need to look at this in another way. I'm looking at television right now. They're talking about a decision 2016, a president election. I don't even watch it because it's a joke. You got one person out there, Donald Trump, that's got all the hate groups backing him. You have Hillary Clinton that has strokes going on. There's something going on health-wise. It's crazy. It's totally crazy.
What he was seeing on his cell phone, so he snapped these pictures after he says he saw the Democratic National Convention bus dumping human waste down a storm drain in Lawrenceville.
Wastewater just dumped in Lawrenceville.
So this is a funny story on the news. They were talking about a DNC bus dumping human waste. Human waste in the town. It's crazy.
The driver saw that the sewage container for the bus was starting to leak because it was full. He was concerned that the bus would have to.
It's just disgusting. And the same thing applies to trains out here in the city of Chicago. All these places, you know, they have human waste dropping and the train tracks and stuff. And it's insane.
The Charter Teachers Union and Uno Charter School System reached an agreement at 3 this morning. The charter schools agreed to cap class size at 32 and continue to pay the bulk of teachers' pension contributions.
I'm just looking at charter schools, you know, the funding, all that stuff. It's just crazy, you know, and the whole issue is that we don't do and say anything. The people back in the 50s and the 40s and the 30s all did. They fought back. People coming in from different countries fought back. This society has gotten so complacent to accept anything. It's not even funny anymore. Totally complacent. Complacent so that it's become so, it's like a danger, a threat. Complacent to whatever is going on in the community. We have lack of care. Lack of care for our own self and our own safety and well-being. And the only way this stuff is going to change is if you decide to make changes yourself. In this time of this election, we're going to see some horrible things happen. After November, either one of these candidates getting in, it's not going to be for us, black or white. They're in it for their own political gain, and you are not on the list. You are not on the list. You're not needed to amuse the camera. Oh, these people are for this, all these people are that, so they can make the election look like somebody won by your vote. Say that only a sixth of the population comes out and votes, which probably will happen. You might think there's millions of people coming out, but a lot of people say, hey, why? What? What's the point? Hey, I got to go out here and try to make some money to survive. Why am I going to go out here and vote? That's the real story. But you, on the other hand, is believing this lie that's telling you that all these people running out voting for these two people. They have no U.S. agenda. What agenda are they talking about? What's the policy agenda? One's talking about getting rid of Mexicans, getting rid of blacks, whatever. The other one's talking about what? You know, what's the agenda? And why we're at a footstep of a war in Russia. Now, we don't even know why we're at a close to war with Russia. How many of you people out there know that we're almost close to war with Russia? And how many people out there know why? I mean, really, who knows why we're getting in war with Russia and what's going on? How many people out there know what's going on with Syria? And most of you people don't even care. If it's not sports-related, music-related, like Bob was saying, nobody's in it. If it's not related to something that you have a passion for, you're not in it. You don't care until something blows up, then you start running. But the question is, where are you going to run to? Because there ain't going to be no place to run and hide. They're talking sky war. Remember in the Bible they were talking about sky wars, and you see pictures and depictions of sky wars and these ancient so-called mythical relics there around the sky wars and stories of ancient aliens about sky wars. Sky wars are things fought with weapons of mass destruction in the sky, which you cannot control. It's controlled by others. So what are you going to do? You're on the ground. You have no jet plane, and you're not Wonder Woman, Wonder Man to go get some fly up there and fight a battle in the sky. You have nothing. And your little cat pistol that you got in the house or stuff you brought back from back in the day of the war or whatever the hell you got ain't going to do nothing with these designer missiles and drones and things that they can come and fly right up to your window and, you know, execute you in a minute. Gaddafi, though, he was a badass. Look where Gaddafi is now. There is absolutely nothing you can do. And whatever they talk about getting guns, they ain't got nothing to do with anything other than make sure you're not armed when they send the military in when they declare martial law. That's what they're moving towards. Because they're going to say that, you know, something's going to happen after or before this election. I don't think any of these people are going to get elected. I think they went back and thought about it. At first they thought Hillary was going to get in. And I think they sat down in a little think tank and said, okay, well, the algorithm is showing that the population is going towards Donald Trump. We can't have that happen because Trump was just there as a Trump card to make sure Hillary got in. Well, it don't look like it's going to happen that way, folks, so let's do this. And she's sick right now, so let's throw the election. Let's do this. We're going to have a fight over in Russia and get a military war going on with Russia or some other country. And then while that war is going on, we're going to break in the news media, you know, like wag the dog, tail of the dog, break in on news and say, okay, well, we're at war right now, and the election has to be held, and President Obama is going to stay in until this war is over, because, you know, you don't switch presidents when there's a war. So then what will happen is when he declares war, that means martial law is open again, its door. That means that people have to be in at 6 o'clock and go food and water rations and do whatever the hell they want, give you more Monsanto food, and now merging in with Bayer aspirin. Who knows what the hell that shit stuff is. But you're going to be able to, you know, have some good bend-ins with that, you know, Monsanto genetically modified foods and non-labeled in stores now. And, you know, like I did on the other show, I had these people on my Facebook I interviewed that were talking about Monsanto merging in with Bayer. And, you know, people were saying, well, what the heck is that going to be? And you're going to buy this product in the store and you're going to look at that and what are you eating? What are you drinking? What is it? You know, and then there's no cures for any of the stuff they give you. You think drugs on the street are bad. Prescription drugs are 100 million times worse because of their chemical. Those things you can't even get out of your system. You can't even get it out of your system. One of the medications that I have taken is supposed to be lowering your blood pressure. That prescription is by another name used to be given to drug addicts to get them off of drugs. It's a dangerous drug. They said once you take it, you can't, you know, be eased off of it, this, that, and the other. I say that's the reason why I read everything that they give me. Now, my blood pressure is tremendously high. I'm doing what I can, try to get it under control, but see, pain has a lot to do with it, too. So, you know, as I said, I was in 3 car accidents, so I'm in a lot of pain. So once I can figure out how to get rid of the pain and deal with some of the other issues, I have a sciatic nerve problem in my back from the last car accident and things. Once I figure out how to, you know, attack those things, get things under control, guess what, folks? Then I have a basis of new start. And every one of you would have a basis of new start because, again, I'm looking at people today. We're getting older and haggard, younger. We're deteriorating more faster. More people wheelchairs and oxygen. More people just trying to barely make it. Can't afford anything. You know? The whole issue is that the lack of what we have is causing the issues that we're seeing on the street. The lack of what we're supposed to have. The lack of our young people knowing the future. The lack of anyone being able to work himself out a problem. There was a young man that I was in communication with. I hope he's okay. I hadn't seen any more emails from him. But he had sent me this email that he didn't want to live anymore. He basically wanted to be locked up in prison because that's all he was good for. He said he'd been locked up in prison all his life. That's all he was used to. So he did not feel that he belonged anywhere other than being locked up. And as I talked to him all day, I was talking to him, emailing him back and forth. He kept on getting more despondent, saying that I just feel like I need to take my life. I wrote to him. I said, is there anything I can do, any type of work you want to do, anything you want to do? And he wrote me back, and I hadn't heard from him. I gave him my number to call because I felt his disparity. Think about it. He told me when he was a young kid, his family locked him up in the basement of his home. Now think how cruel and evil that is. Lock your child up in the basement of the home so they can't be around you for whatever reason. Then he said that somebody else, after he was going through that, who knows what else he went through, he ended up being locked up again. And some kind of a thing, it sounded like he was a sex prisoner or something. So in his conscious mind, the only thing he knew was being locked up. So the only thing he was used to is being locked up. So for him to be in a place where there was no walls to be locked up in was like a nightmare job. Because of post-traumatic stresses. Or now, the normal people, if they see that stuff, you know, it's like ignore it, you know. So, you know, it's a show, so what? That's the attitude we have. But the thing is that that could be you or me. Crying out for help because you're, you know, sick and alien, don't know what to do, don't know who to call. So we're supposed to turn our back. And then we say we're a good Christian. Are we? Are we really? If we are in the ballpark of, you have to back up again. If we're in the, oh boy, oh, in the, yeah, I'm trying to see if I can. I'm trying to get my wheelchair in an elevator. Did it. But I'm just saying that how can we walk in this society and know this, what's going on, and welcome two political candidates in the White House that have no substance to anything that's going on in the street? They don't care about the black community, neither one. I don't care what anybody, they can tell Hillary Clinton all they want. She doesn't have any clue of what's going on in black community, and she doesn't care. Donald Trump doesn't care either. Why should he? He made his money, you know, and why should he care? He doesn't even understand what you're talking about. These people have lived a level that they, you know, they're not hungry or starving. They haven't been on the street to see crime. I remember late Jane Byrne, Mayor of the City of Chicago. At least she tried. She moved into Cabrini Green just for a day or two just to see what that was like. Now, for that kind of commitment, you know, that was a cool for that lady to do that. She was a feisty little lady, you know, and she went in and moved in to the Green to show that, you know, she was committed to everybody in Chicago.
And whether she was or was not, at least she made a commitment to see what was going on. Michael Blandick was married, and would he care to do that? Hell no. He was city council. Attorney for the city of Chicago. He was getting contracts, and I know all about Blandick. I know about all these people out here. And Jane Burns, like I said, was one woman that, you know, made that commitment. She's the one that started the Taste of Chicago and all the kind of entertainment stuff. And gave Chicago another little, play. They'll talk about her. Up until she died, nobody even, mentioned her name. But she was really, if you want to talk about women running for office, thank you. And then she committed herself somewhat to, the people. I don't see that with these people running now. I'm not going to see Hillary move in the project building. I'm not going to see Hillary come down in the hood and hang out, and see what the people are going through in the community for real. It's not about the community. It's about them getting in so they can get their political foyer, They don't care. And you think your vote counts? Come on now, for real. I told you, I worked news election service when Ronald Reagan ran for president, and the whole service was down, and they were touting on the media that Ronald Reagan had won and Jimmy Carter had lost, and there was no way that they had any voting information because the whole system was down, and Jimmy Carter probably won. And that's how corrupt and crooked this damn election thing is. So when are we going to wake up? Now, you have people marching around, Black Lives Matter, and everybody protesting about different things. And that's cool. And the thing is, they're probably going to attack me for saying what I said on the air. This has been going on. This is an ongoing thing. So that's what they do, too. If you say anything outside the box, I told you what they did at Gary Webb. I can go on for days and all the guys that came on different shows and things that talked about what was going on. William Cooper, let's see, who else? Gary Webb, what's the other guy? In the wilderness, he was a friend of my show. He got so badly attacked, he had to flee out of the country, and he couldn't take living out wherever the hell he was. And he came back, and then the next day he found dead, shot in the head 15 times with shotgun blast, suicide. Finally, suicide's kind of interesting too, Go over and be able to shoot yourself 2, 3, 4, 5 levels of times with a shotgun, back of the head, hang yourself and stuff like that. And suicide. I don't know what to say. This election to me is a farce, and the situation of black genocide is real. Somebody needs to do a complete study to find out why so many blacks are losing limbs or in wheelchairs and stuff. Is that to make sure that we're not able to fight back? We're all going to be, on dialysis and everything else and can't move. And that way you can pick us up, a lot quicker than put the military in behind us. And what did we do, that deserved all these mistreatments? They had white people were over here slaves first. But I don't see them being mishandled like they're mishandling the African Americans. First slaves that came over here. Were indigenous whites. And they did that in Australia, too. But then they allowed them, to be able to integrate into the system. Here? For us? No. Nothing. Only thing we have is possibly a coming rap star. And you know what? That's the void of that, because I'm going to tell you, music industry is so damn corrupt. I'm still trying to get royalties for my dad's music. Who I'm going to call up again and start, you know, fighting about again. Because it was music that he created, and he hasn't gotten, you know, his dad, I'm trying to get the money for, you know, Cab Calloway, Milton, his money, music he wrote, and all the other kind of music. And they sell the catalogs around. You don't know where the catalogs are, and you have to trace them back, see who brought out the catalog, and then try to figure out where the money is. But they don't tell you. Ask him, you know, that's useless, too. So the bottom line is that we are in a situation of flux because this whole thing of what America is supposed to be representing is not what it is. We're opening the doors to Europe coming here to the United States. More Europeans are here than ever before. More people have to pay for housing up the yang-yang here than live here. They're offering incentives to others. So I'm going to end this broadcast on that note, and I'll probably be back on tomorrow, but I'm just covering the things that are going on. And letting you know that this election is not what you think it is. It's not for you, any of us. I'm going to end the line. End the line. So I'm traveling right now because I got things that I'm trying to do. But the bottom line is that this election is not for any of us, not anybody. And I think that we need to get the news media to report the other 38 candidates are running. So we do have real choice instead of what's being offered up. So I'm going to end this broadcast on this note. I'll be back on tomorrow. And in the next week, I'm going to have levels of guests on discussing some of these issues that I brought here and topics this morning. So I thank you all for listening. And email me at danne.burley@gmail.com. And I will be back tomorrow. And good night. Thank you for listening. This is Deanne.